This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Corner now for Little. Off the board to the high slot. Near side now for Connor. Moves in, shoots, and scores! Kyle Connor with his second of the night will end it. Jets win! Jets win! Jets win in overtime!
Paulie Edmonds with the call last night. The Winnipeg Jets victorious by a 2-1 margin. Kyle Connor getting the overtime winner, getting both goals for the Winnipeg Jets last night in the contest against the LA Kings, a game the Jets were certainly the better of the two teams and dominant at points in time, especially maybe not so much on the scoreboard, given that it was a 2-1 margin, but certainly the advanced stats, the Corsi stats, bear out the Jets having the dominant time of possession, dominant stats in last night's contest. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we welcome you to this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday night. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, a dominant performance by the Jets, but that certainly was overshadowed by Patrick Laine's injury during the game. He left the game, as basically everybody in the world, or everybody in the Jets world, now knows. Doesn't sound like it's too serious of an injury, according to Paul Maurice. Might miss a game or two games, something along those lines. The Jets didn't skate today, so obviously we have no additional update, but it sounds like the Jets and Patrick Laine dodged a bullet when he blocked that shot from Alec Martinez.
Yeah, that's right, Drew. And Darren Drager also reported today that it looks like it's not serious, saying that Patrick Laine might miss a game. He might miss a couple games, but he's definitely not going to miss any extended period of time. And, you know, you mentioned that the Jets dominated. I don't know if I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, they dominated the third period, guys, but, I mean, they didn't score in this game until late in the second period. And don't get me wrong, Drew, I thought that the Jets controlled the pace of play, but especially in that third period. I mean, the LA Kings were dog tired. And Drew Doughty still ended up playing over 30 minutes yesterday. And I thought that the Kings looked really slow all game. And, you know, give them a lot of credit here, guys. They're battling tooth and nail for that final wild card spot, or one of those two wild card spots in the Western Conference. And they pick up 3 points out of a possible four against the Jets and the Wild, right? So you're not picking up points against, you know, bad teams here. You're talking about two teams that are going to be in the playoffs this year. So give LA a lot of credit. And Tyler Toffoli rings one off the bar, Shawnee, and, you know, they're basically a couple of inches away from going home with the 2 points. So, you know, the Kings definitely didn't have their best third period, but how can you when you're that tired? You know, Andrei Kopitar told us after the game, they got in around, you know, 1:32 in the morning.
After playing an overtime game in Minnesota the night before.
I mean, give them credit for being in this game up until they were into the game. And, you know, it was really the second period, later in the second period, I should say, Sean, that they took over. And, you know, Kyle Connor, what can you say here, guys? You know, he has a really good chance at scoring 30 goals. He's up to 27. And, you know, he really was the story of that game for me.
Certainly the quietest 30-goal scorer that might be in the NHL this year. 27, obviously, now. And getting absolutely no attention. I mean, Matthew Barzal, everyone expects, has got the Calder Trophy wrapped up, and that's all fine and good. But Kyle Connor truly having a very impressive freshman year for the Winnipeg Jets. Granted, playing alongside Scheifele and Wheeler, but, you know, that means he has the skill set necessary to play alongside both of those guys there, Shawnee.
Yeah, and Paul Maurice saying post-game, really liked his game. He said speed is a perfect weapon for our lineup, and you look at what Kyle Connor's been able to do these past, I'd say, almost 3-4 months, where his game has just really, really taken a turn for, I mean, just, it's a completely different player than what we saw last year, even the beginning of this year. A guy who just looks confident with the puck. He's aggressive to the puck when he doesn't have it. He's on the hunt all the time. He's a guy who's motoring his legs just constantly, and his speed plays off what Wheeler and Scheifele do with one another so well, how they're able to cycle down low. Kyle Connor just in on the forecheck all the time. He's so tenacious, and Blake Wheeler talked about it post-game also, how he's having an underrated, tremendous rookie season, how important he is to their lineup. In with a guy who there was so much uncertainty around whether or not he'd even crack the lineup, and he didn't right off the top. I just want to say one thing also before we further this discussion. You talked about Anze Kopitar. Career high, shout out to Anze, reached a career high 82 points last night, scoring or getting that assist, I should say, for the Jets, or against the Jets. How do you celebrate a new career high in points? You take a shot of Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah, that was obviously he wasn't feeling tip-top last night. Never mind that. If you saw in the warm-up, Drew Doughty almost caught him with a high stick as well.
Doughty was sort of
being a little careless with the stick in the warm-up, and all of a sudden almost took out the Kings captain with a stick with the blade close to the cheek and almost to the eye. Could have been a lot worse than it was, obviously.
Yeah, and, you know, Anze Kopitar, I don't know if he ends up, you know, being one of the finalists for the Hart Trophy, Sean. But this year, he's playing like he was back in 2012, 2014, when the Kings were winning Stanley Cups.
He's a beast.
Unbelievable. Was it 2014 they won their last cup, or was that 2015? One of those 2 years.
Yeah,
LA
14, because they won it in 12, and they won it again in 14.
The one Alec Martinez got the overtime goal, and that was 2014, right? So, yeah. I mean, Anze Kopitar, I mean, he might hit 90 points this year. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. You know, he had a bit of a down year last year, and, you know, he had a big impact on the game yesterday, and, you know, afterwards, he didn't really want to talk about, you know, his personal achievements. You know, he wanted that extra point, but he's having a heck of a year.
Yeah, it also might be a Lady Bing candidate. Mm-hmm. He's only got 18 penalty minutes on the season.
What about the Selke?
Selke is also what I was going to say, because we know how impressive he is. His two-way game is. You mentioned Sean and Ezzy talking about Kyle Connor, and you mentioned Blake Wheeler talking about Kyle Connor. Here's what Wheeler had to say post-game last night about the performance lately of Kyle Connor.
I think everything goes under the radar when you play for Winnipeg. You know, he's been one of the huge X factors for our team. I mean, him stepping into our lineup and contributing at the rate he's contributed at is a huge reason why we sit where we are today. He was a guy that, you know, you had high hopes for coming into the year, but obviously a little bit of a question mark to know really what you're going to get. And he's taken the opportunity he's gotten this year, and he's done a great job.
You know, what you see with Kyle Connor, from my perspective, is, you know, there's always a learning curve for even the most talented rookie. There's always a learning curve to get from the, you know, the previous level, be it the AHL, be it college hockey, be it overseas, whatever it might be, to the NHL. And Kyle Connor was able to put up some numbers while still sort of making his way through that learning curve. We're now at the point in time where, you know, you're 70 games into the season, 65, whatever it exactly is for Connor, given he didn't start the year with the Jets, that the learning curve is, he's almost towards the end of the learning curve, where he's now a confident player who's not just passive to Scheifele and Wheeler anymore and doesn't rely strictly on Scheifele and Wheeler anymore for his... For setting it up and for making plays. This is a guy who's more confident, who's willing to be, to some extent, of course, a driver on that line and getting closer to equal footing, or, you know, with Scheifele and Wheeler, than he was at the start of the season.
Connor has room to grow, guys, but, you know, in his rookie year, his first full year in the NHL, I mean, you can see that he's definitely exceeded expectations. We talked about it, right? He has a really good chance at hitting 30 goals, and, you know, that puts him as a potential Calder Trophy finalist.
Well,
but
I think he's a finalist for the Calder Trophy right now.
We'll probably
see
the name there.
I would think it's Barzal's going to win it, but I think Connor is probably a finalist, because I'm not sure who else is, you know, necessarily knocking him out of the top three.
Well, I mean, Brock Besser's still in there, even though he's missed games. Alex DeBrincat is in there. Yanni Gourde. There's other players in there, Drew.
Right.
But right now, absolutely. I mean,
Connor being second, though, in good rookie goal
scoring. I mean, and, you know, Charlie McAvoy's another guy. But absolutely, you could make a strong argument for Kyle Connor. We might be a little bit biased because we get to watch him night in and night out. But he's having an excellent year. And to Sean's point, I mean, Kyle Connor has played the majority of the season on the top line. Right there, that says something about the way that Paul Maurice thinks of Kyle Connor, the way Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele think of Kyle Connor. I mean, Connor is an excellent player, and he's only going to get better, and it's just really nice to see. He had an excellent game, maybe one of his best games as a member of the Winnipeg Jets, but he hasn't had very many bad games. There were, you know, portions of the early part of the season, Sean, where, you know, Kyle Connor was struggling and he was demoted to the lower lines, but I don't think that he's going anywhere off of that top line anytime soon, because he's just gelled so well with Scheifele and Wheeler.
Oh, absolutely. And just, you watch them, what they're able to do down low against the opposition's top or top defending lines. Like, they went against the Kopitar-Brown head-to-head last night, and for the majority, of that game had them hemmed in their zone.
Well, I saw the stats, Sean. I don't know if you saw it, guys, but the stat came out from Mike Kelly, you know, friend of the program, and Jamie Thomas was the one who I saw it from his Twitter feed. The Jets line, so the Shifley, Wheeler, and Connor line, had the puck on their stick in the offensive zone more than the entire L.A. Kings team had offensive zone time last night's game.
That's absurd.
Well, the third period, Drew, was
the Jets had
completely in the Kings zone. Well, I mean, the Jets were skating circles. There was that portion of the period after the Jets' power play ended. Yes. They didn't score, and the Kings couldn't get out of their own zone. Derek, the Jets had a full change.
Where Derek Forbort had the 2:54 right. shift after he blocked two shots and could barely, he couldn't get to the bench. I think that was late in the second period, if I recall correctly, because it was the long change at that point in time. But the stats, I mean, continuing on from that Mike Kelly tweet, the Jets had offensive zone puck possession last night for 11:54 compared to the Kings' 3:17. The 11:54 that the Jets spent in the Kings' offensive zone last night was the highest for any team in the entire NHL this season. So, you know, the 2-1 game really is a testament to Jack Campbell last night and how good he was in net for the LA Kings. And he's a nice story, Jack Campbell. This is a guy who was a first-round draft pick, 12th overall, if I'm not mistaken, of the Dallas Stars. Back in the day, if I'm not mistaken, who has bounced around, never really gotten an opportunity, comes in with L.A. He's playing in the minor leagues, and then Darcy Kemper gets traded to the Arizona Coyotes. Campbell comes
shortly
up.
Shortly after, by the way, he played registered a win over the Jets.
Right, of course. He gets traded to the Coyotes at the deadline. Jack Campbell comes up. He gets his opportunity as a backup goaltender, and really he stole a point for the L.A. Kings last night. So, you know, obviously, the Jets and the Jets fans are happy the Jets get the 2 points, and the Kings are thrilled to even earn that 1 point as they scratch and claw for playoff positioning.
We also have to give a shout out to Eric Comrie, guys. He only up 16 saves, but you know he gets his second career NHL win, his first win of the year, and you know he made some big saves in the first period. Obviously, he didn't face a lot of rubber in the third period. The Kings only had a couple shots, but I remember the save he made on Alex Iafallo in the first period, and you know he was really solid for the Jets coming in relief of Connor Hellebuck. So you know, nice to see Comrie get a start. Yeah. You know, it wasn't expected, but now that Michael Hutchinson and Steve Mason are both out of the lineup again, you know, really nice to see Comrie. You know, just play a nice simple game. You know, make the saves and give his team a chance to win.
Well, this is also, I mean, this is Comrie's, if I'm not mistaken, third career NHL game. The first game this year was that defeat to the Florida Panthers, yep, where I think he gave up 6 or 7 goals, if I recall correctly. Then last year he got a victory in Columbus, but yep, again, it was a high-scoring game. This is nice for him in that, he gets the win, so he helps the team, and two, even though he only faced, you know, the 16 shots, you know, at least it's only, you know, it's a one goal against sort of game, so he feels more comfortable. There's not a ton of rubber getting past him, and the team has to win 7-5 or something like that. It's a 2-1 game where he had to make the key saves whenever he had to make them.
Yeah, Sean, and you better believe that Comrie was tapping that crossbar after Tyler Toffoli had a really good shot at winning the game for the Kings. But again, you know, Comrie didn't have to save, you know, 30 or 35 shots, but he was really good in, you know, a limited amount of shots for the Jets.
A good performance by the Jets last night, you know, dominant in the offensive zone, as we talked about, and winning 2-1 on the scoreboard. They're next in action on Friday night against the Anaheim Ducks. When we come back, we'll talk about the game against the Ducks on Friday. We'll look at the Western Conference playoff race as well. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Shooter. And he will pick it up with a left-handed shot, slowly across that Ducks line, under a course of booze. Stick handling, moving in, shoots, kicked away by Miller. And the Ducks will win it in a shootout tonight. The final score, Anaheim 4, Winnipeg 3, in a shootout. Totals and the postgame show.
Paulie Edmonds with the call the last time the Ducks and the Jets met each other. That was back in late January. One of the weirdest wins Ryan Miller is ever going to get in his NHL career, if you guys recall correctly. Ryan Miller got the win without ever facing a shot.
Mm-hmm.
As John Gibson left the game late with an injury, Ryan Miller comes in, doesn't face a shot in the end of the third period in overtime, and the Ducks end up winning in a shootout. That was also the game that Jacob Trouba was injured, only to return to the Jets lineup last week, of course, out of the lineup again with the concussion that he suffered. You know, Trouba hopefully will be back into the Jets lineup in time for the playoffs. So the Jets and the Ducks will do battle on Friday night at Bell MTS Place. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Asor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Jets homestand continues, been a successful homestand thus far, of course, winners of three games in a row now. Ducks in town, as I mentioned, Ducks in the dogfight, like the LA Kings. They're in a dogfight for the final playoff spots in the Western Conference. The Ducks currently hold down the second wild card spot. They're only a point behind the Kings for third in the Pacific Division, though. So those two teams jostle for some of those spots. Only in the Ducks, of course, 2 points behind the Avalanche for the top spot in the wild card race. So a very important game Friday night for the Anaheim Ducks as they come to town. Ducks are a very dangerous team, even though they're scratching and clawing just to make the playoffs. They're the proverbial team that no one's going to want to play in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, Brandon Montour had a beautiful game-winning goal last game against the New Jersey Devils, and that Devils loss really hurt them because they have Florida hard-charging behind them right now, so it looks like it's really between the Devils and the Panthers in the Eastern Conference. But, you know, you just mentioned it, Drew. You know, the Ducks are finally in a playoff spot. It seems like the entire year they've been looking up at the standings, and, you know, we talked about it 3 or 4 weeks ago. You know, the Ducks earlier in the season without Ryan Getzlaff and Ryan Kessler, but now they're completely healthy, with the exception of, you know, Kevin Bieksa's out. I believe he's the only regular out of the lineup right now, but this is a very deep team, and, you know, we've mentioned this several times throughout the year. You know, when you add Adam Henrique at the expense of Sammy Vatanen, you lose some D-depth, but you become just that much stronger up the middle, and they were already strong up the middle, and Antoine Vermette is now your fourth-line center. But, you know, it's a very familiar Ducks team. This is a veteran group, and you've had some, you know, younger players come into the lineup over the years, but you know, a team that, you know, if you're facing them in the first round, not that any team in the playoffs is going to take anyone else lightly, but especially the Anaheim Ducks, who went all the way to the Western Final last year against the Nashville Predators, that's just not a team that you want to play in the first round. So even though the Jets are pretty much locked in to the second spot in the Central Division right now, they know that the Ducks are hungry. They need all of these points. Mm-hmm. They're not going to take the foot off the gas for the rest of the season, and they can't, because you've got the Calgary Flames, who, even though they're 6 points back right now, they're still chasing.
I think you think the Flames still have a chance?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I think the Flames are done.
But having said that, you have other teams that are chasing you right now.
The St. Louis Blues are the team that I'm looking at as, you know, they still have a couple games in hand on everybody, and they're only, you know, 3 points behind the Ducks.
Right, so the point being that the Anaheim Ducks need these points more than the Jets do.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't mean that the Jets aren't going to go 110% and try to get the win. But, you know, these next few games coming up here, the next three games left on this homestand, you've got the Boston Bruins coming up, you've got the Nashville Predators coming up, and a very hungry Ducks team. Mm-hmm. So it's never going to be easy against Anaheim.
Yeah, and you just talk about a very hungry Ducks team, and you mentioned the Calgary Flames and all the history between those two teams, with the, you know, Flames not being able to win in Anaheim for however many games, was it 20 plus meetings, and all the history between both those teams, and they play each other tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge game. That's essentially, that could be the nail in the coffin for Calgary.
Yes, I think Calgary's already done.
They're clinging.
But if they lose at home tonight on home ice to the Ducks, I mean, on home ice, they've been terrible at home this year, 15-17-4. But if the Ducks lose, if the Flames lose at home tonight to the Ducks will move, you know, about 8 points up on them for the final playoff spot. And that's the end of Calgary, even though I think it already is the end of them. The Blues have a real challenge tonight. Mm-hmm. They're home to Boston. And that's a game that the Blues need, because if they win that game, then they'll leapfrog over the Dallas Stars, in fact, and they will conceivably only be a point or 2 points out of the wild card race in the Western Conference.
Man, Dallas.
Well,
they were not helping themselves on that road trip.
No.
I can assure you that.
No, and they finished off that road trip, of course, which you know we saw them Sunday night here in Winnipeg, and then you lose Ben Bishop during that game, and then you go into Washington at the end of that road trip, and you lose a 4-3 decision to the Capitals, and that's Dallas is really really up against it now. You're relying on you know Ben Bishop.
Mm-hmm. Fumes.
Yeah, that's a team that looks like they're just completely out of gas at this point.
Just to go back to Dallas, just real quick, was that not just the epitome of frustration by Jamie Benn, that slew foot on Blake Wheeler? You saw them try. You saw the initiation, and I get it, right? I get what he's trying to do there. He's trying to fire his team up in a big divisional game, but that's a little too far. Jets come back, score on the power play. You're the captain of your team trying to rally your team. I did not like that tripping penalty, and I thought it was a dumb one as a captain of your team.
Yeah, those are two guys who were battling from the face-off, so I think
that was crazy.
Yeah, I think Jamie Benn was just, you know, to the point of being on fumes and frustrated with that bad road trip. They had bad losses in Montreal. They had a tough loss in Toronto. They had a bad loss in Ottawa. You know, those are games, at least two of those three games you expect to win.
You know, boys, just to go back to the Anaheim Ducks, who the Jets are playing on Friday.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about Kyle Connor and how good of a year he's having, kind of, you know, underappreciated across the NHL. You know, every time I watch the Anaheim Ducks or look at the, you know, the box scores after the games, Rickard Rakell, mm-hmm. who had a career year last year, 33 goals. This year he's up to 31 goals and 62 points already.
Leading the team.
I mean, to me, he's the most underrated player maybe in the entire league.
He steps out every time you watch that team. He's a guy that stands out to you just for the speed and skill alone.
And, you know, we talked about it, Drew. I mean, this Ducks team didn't do a lot at the trade deadline, prior to the trade deadline. They brought in Jason Chimera, but aside from that, they didn't do a lot, and that's because they made their moves earlier in the season. We talked about it. Adam Henrique was the big one, right?
Absolutely. You go up the middle with Getzlaff, Kessler, Henrique, and then there's, you know, lately it's been Derek Grant over Antoine Vermette, but I mean, that's, when you go, you know, three or four deep up the middle like they do, that means you're going to be competitive.
I guess we should mention Chris Kelly, too. Yep. After the Olympics, mm-hmm. they brought him in, but, sure. you know, for the most part, it's the, you know, the similar cast of characters, right? You mentioned
that's why
Ryan
They're Western Conference finalists last year. That's why you know, congratulations, Nashville. You've been the best team in the entire NHL or the best team in the Western Conference basically all season long. Your first-round opponent is the team that took you to seven games in last year's Western Conference final.
Right, and I'm not saying that the St. Louis Blues won't give the Nashville Predators a run for their money, but if I'm Nashville, I would much rather play St. Louis than Anaheim, wouldn't you?
Of course. I'd rather play anybody other than Anaheim. I mean, that's a hell of an accomplishment for being so good during 82 games is you get possibly the hardest first round matchup. That's why the whole playoff format, and we've talked about it ad nauseum, the whole playoff format needs to be rejigged in the NHL to make the regular season and success in the regular season more meaningful.
Can I ask you guys one thing?
Sure.
Is there any player in the entire NHL that steps into Bell MTS plays hated more than Corey Perry?
I mean, Ryan Kessler's hated also. So there's a lot of, I mean, those guys are pretty disliked. I mean, those guys will be, I mean, it won't have the feeling of a playoff game because obviously we know what a playoff game between these two teams feels like. But there's going to be a desperate Ducks team against the Jets team that isn't desperate because they're more or less locked into second place. But it won't take a lot for Corey Perry and the dislike to rear its ugly head again.
To answer your question, Sean, no.
Fine, you can do it in a fewer words than I use.
It goes back to 2015, right? And the Ducks sweeping the Jets in a series in which the Jets could have easily won at least one or two games.
They had late leads in a couple of those games.
Right, so Corey Perry's got to be at the top of that list for me.
Then he breaks Matthew Perreault's arm or whatever he did.
Yeah. The knee on Patrick Laine at the World Championship.
Public enemy number one, Johnny.
He's certainly right up there. Quickly, guys, we've got a couple minutes here. Brian Little's been playing right wing lately.
I love Corey Perry, by the way.
You just don't. Not
you know how big of a fan I am of Perry.
If Corey Perry's
but
not
Jets
playing
fans
against,
don't like
if
him.
Corey Perry's not playing against the team that you root for, if Corey Perry was a member of the Winnipeg Jets, he'd be the number one fan favorite throughout the in the city. That's always
there's always a reason why. You know, Team Canada knocks on the door of Corey Perry and Brad Marchand. And I realize that these guys are pests and all of that, but they're really good hockey players and they know how to win.
Yeah, Marchand's dirtier than Perry, though, or maybe more reckless than Perry. Perry is subtle with his dirtiness. You don't see the suspension.
Perry's like, no saint, Drew.
I know he's dirty, but with Marchand, he gets suspended. Perry doesn't get suspended for his activities like Marchand does. People are... unless you're really watching, Perry sort of flies a little bit under the radar when it comes to how dirty.
I don't think Perry flies under any radar.
That'd be interesting if you iso-cammed well, no, both
I'm,
of
I'm
them.
I'm saying, like, Marchand has the spotlight on him when it comes to suspensions. He's suspended every year for multiple times a year.
Yep.
How many? I don't know when last time Corey Perry was suspended or if it's been for multiple 6-8-game suspensions like Marchand has.
No, you're right.
And that's the only difference between the two of them. But they're both very good players. I agree with you there. Brian Little playing right wing. Your thoughts on that? Is it injury-related? It sounds like it's injury-related.
Yeah, well, Paul Friesen of the Winnipeg Sun wrote about it today, and you know, he admitted that he is dealing with a bit of an injury, and it's not something that we've seen ever here. I mean, 7 years of the Winnipeg Jets being back in town, and Brian Little has always been either the number one or number two center, and now he's playing wing. And, you know, I thought, you know, he had a pretty good game, and he assisted on Kyle Connor's game-winning goal there in overtime.
Very nice pass.
And it's something that's going to take some adjustment. You know, Brian Little has played on the wing at times, but never for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something that we're not familiar with, but, you know, he's a very talented player.
You wonder if it's something, though, that if his whatever ailment he has, if it heals up over the next week or 10 days, how long does this experiment last?
Right.
I mean, I don't think this is a permanent move or at least a relatively permanent move.
No, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be permanent, but, I mean, bringing in Paul Stastny allows you to do that, right? Because then you can roll out Scheifele and Stastny and Lowry, and obviously Hendricks is out of the lineup, but you've got Andrew Copp and another guys that we didn't talk about last segment. I mean, Andrew Copp just seems to be so consistent game after game, and, you know, he definitely, you know, isn't the guy that you're going to expect to score goals on a nightly basis, but always has an impact when he's out there.
Yeah, Paul Maurice saying Andrew Copp has taken his game to the next level. So maybe Copp's improved play and maybe a little bit more attention to detail in the defensive zone has allowed Paul Maurice the luxury to shelter maybe a Brian Little from, say, taking faceoffs if you're dealing with a shoulder or a wrist injury or something of the upper body nature. I just think that Copp's development and him showing the head coach that he can be trusted in those hard-fought situations has allowed the Jets, plus their depth at center with, like you were talking about, Paul Stastny's acquisition, the luxury to shelter some of their veteran centermen and allow them to heal during this final 10-9 games.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays itself out over the remainder of the regular season and then into the first round of the playoffs.
Just sounds weird to say Brian Little winger.
It does sound weird. The Jets' first-round playoff opponent is quite likely to be the Minnesota Wild. Colorado Avalanche are trying to do a little something about that. When we return, Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune joins us for a conversation about those Minnesota Wild. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Wednesday evening, you're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We're trying to get Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune on the line to talk about the Wild, likely the Jets' first-round opponent. But the Wild actually in a battle with Colorado Avalanche. They're charging hard, 6-1-3 in their last 10 games. They're now only 2 points behind the Wild and would actually have the tiebreaker over the Wild. So maybe it's going to end up being the Colorado Avalanche in the first round against the Jets. We'll know more in about 9 games' time. About 2 or so weeks until the end of 2.5 weeks till the end of the regular season. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli has got their 5 big screen TVs. They have great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Minneapolis Star Tribune, she covers the Minnesota Wild. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Sarah McClellan. Sarah, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, no problem. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Sarah. How about yourself?
Not bad, not bad. The snow's starting to melt, so I can see spring starting to get closer, so that's exciting around here.
A bit of a change from your days covering the Coyotes, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, that's why I've never been so excited for temperatures in the 50s and 60s Fahrenheit.
Sarah, obviously we brought you on to talk about the Wild. It was at least looking more likely that the Jets and the Wild would be first-round playoff matchup. The Colorado Avalanche want to say a little bit something about that. They're creeping up on the Wild, only 2 points behind them now. Are the Wild sort of in that difficult time between when they know they're going to be a playoff team, or they're likely to be a playoff team. I guess they don't know anything, but they're likely to be a playoff team, so they're trying to balance maybe getting some rest versus maintaining a position as we wind down the last 8-9 games here of the regular season?
Well, I think they've been forced to rest, obviously, with the way the schedule is kind of shaken out this week. They played L.A. Monday and now don't play till Saturday against Nashville at home. So, I think that it's just been built in that way, that they've been able to rest and kind of recuperate and get in some practice time. But, I think the mindset there is still very much you have to earn points every night. And, even though they do look like they're in a somewhat comfortable position in that third spot, I think they feel that nothing's guaranteed yet. And they still have to have that urgency every night, whether that is to, solidify their positioning in part, but also get ready for that type of intensity that's expected of playoff hockey, where, your back's against the wall on a nightly basis. So I don't think they feel too comfortable yet. They probably realize the math, and I think they know where they're at, but I think there's still that desperation to, try to be at your best at this time of year.
Sarah, the Wild were one of the quieter teams prior to the NHL trade deadline. Would you say that was probably the good decision, knowing that hindsight is 20/20?
So far I think it certainly flattered them, because I think what it enabled them to do was really solidify a lineup. And there was no, wondering if there's going to be changes. This really solidified the group. And ever since then, they've had probably the most consistent forward lines that they've had all year. And I think that, if you talk to the players, that's really contributed to the success they've had lately, is they've been able to build chemistry and they've been able to kind of find a rhythm. And, there was just so much juggling, I think, leading up to the deadline, partly because of injuries. But, I think, because of that too, then, it's Bruce Boudreau trying to figure out, what he has and who best suits whom. And so I think now that they know this is the roster, these are the guys that are going to be tasked with, trying to get this team on a lengthy playoff run, there's been just some comfortability, I think, kind of settling in with this lineup, and chemistry's developed as a result.
Sarah, you talked about the 4-day break that the Wild are in the midst of right now, and just looking back at their previous three games, a win in Vegas, a win in Arizona, and then that tough OT loss to the LA Kings at home. You also talked about health and getting healthy. Is this an interesting time for not only a 4-day break, but for the Wild themselves, trying to gain as many points as they possibly can? They're on a bit of a roll now, that 4-day break, but on the other hand, trying to balance, trying to get healthy going into the final stretch of the season?
Oh, for sure. I'm really interested to see how they come out of this break, because on the one side, like you said, it does force you to rest. It does force you to kind of take a mental pause and get some practice time. That's so valuable this time of year and so rare. And, I think Boudreau's acknowledged, this is probably the last few practices of the season with how busy the schedule gets. It just kind of becomes about maintenance days and, picking your spots. But, having said that, this was a team that was on a nice little rhythm before this break. To go into Vegas for the first time and clinch a season sweep over the Golden Knights, which no one, I don't think, has been able to say they've, beat Vegas three games this season. To follow that up, to go into Arizona, which is a team that's actually given the Wild trouble this year, to win there and then to come back home and get a point, out of that LA game, which I think solidified the fact that they can't fall from third. During this break, I think the Avalanche could catch them, but they couldn't overtake them. So they really kind of mission accomplished with those three games before this break. But having said that, 4 days off at this time of the year still feels really weird. We're just used to the grind, and I'm interested to see how they come back out of it, if they can rediscover that urgency after being off for that long.
Sarah McClellan, our guest on NHL This Week. Sarah covers the Minnesota Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Sarah, you wrote about this in the Star Tribune a few days ago. The defense for the Wild are racking up points at an all-time record for the franchise. They, in fact, have broken the previous record, and they're still with 9 or so games to go this season. From your perspective, why are they getting so much offensive productivity from the back end?
Well, I think Ryan Suter is obviously a big catalyst for that. Someone who just has a knack for being involved in the play and, setting plays up and being a power play quarterback. You saw just the other night the pass that he threaded through, through the middle of the ice up to Eric Staal to spring him for a breakaway and a timely goal in that game against the Kings. He just has that vision and that ability to execute, and I think that's been a big reason why. But also, like I said, the power play too, I think has flattered a lot of a lot of the point men that this team has. You know, it's a unit that's kind of been up and down, but I think overall still slots in the top half of the league. And there's so much emphasis put on that. I think that the defense are put in situations where, you know, they can contribute that way. And I think lastly, too, just, you know, besides Suter, you know, a lot of guys, I think, on the back end have matured offensively and are having career-type years. I know Matt Dumba's already exceeded what he's produced offensively in prior season, and before he tore his hamstring, Jared Spurgeon was headed for a career year. So, you know, I think that speaks to the maturity, the familiarity with this blue line. There wasn't a lot of turnover, so I think there's, you know, that comfort level with, you know, your defensive partners and then the forwards too, since there wasn't a lot of roster turnover. I think there's just that familiarity that this is a unit that's cohesive, and there's that chemistry from the defense to the forwards.
You know, Sarah, you just mentioned Jared Spurgeon, who's out of the lineup with that hamstring injury, and he's been out of the lineup for 1 week now, and he was originally scheduled to be out for 4 weeks. Is there any chance that he's going to be healthy for the early part of the first round? And do you think that the Wild's defense is deep enough if they don't have Spurgeon for the entire first round?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, that's the hope, is that he'll be able to participate in the playoffs and be ready then. I think 4 weeks exactly is day one of the postseason. So if you know, the math lines up and he continues to progress, you know, on that timeline, then it lines up well for the Wild. But, you know, I think so far they've held up all right in the week without him. But to do that in a playoff series, obviously the Wild is better with Jared Spurgeon on the ice than they are with off it. So that's going to be a challenge, I think. I think that's why the hope and, you know, the fingers are being crossed that he's able to heal up and be back in time, because it's tough to be without a top pairing defenseman like him that does so much. And for people that don't watch the Wild closely, they, you know, the name might not jump out at them, and you know, you may think, well, this is a unit that still has, you know, a Ryan Suter and a, you know, Jonas Brodin and a Matt Dumba, they'll be fine. But when you watch this team day in, day out, Jared Spurgeon is a really integral member of that blue line, and he does a lot of things that maybe don't, you know, jump out on a stat sheet, but that make this unit tick. And so this is a team and a blue line that's obviously better with him in the mix than out of it.
I think Jets fans can relate to that, Sarah, with Jacob Trouba.
Yeah, for sure.
Sarah, just looking at the conclusion of the month, it coming out of this four-day break, it does not get much easier for the Minnesota Wild. They play Nashville twice, they play the Bruins, and then they play the Dallas Stars, pretty much the epitome of a hungry team right now, twice. For a team that's fighting tooth and nail to maintain their playoff position, not an easy conclusion to the month.
No, but, you know, talking to the players, you know, I think they're eager for that, because this is basically the type of atmosphere, as close as you can mimic, you know, in a regular season, is a playoff series, because mm-hmm. these are teams that either, you know, probably jostling to solidify their spot or get into the postseason. And so I think they feel this is the better scenario than maybe having a softer schedule where you're playing teams who are out of it and have nothing to play for and can just be loose. I think the Wild has struggled in some of those games this season to kind of play an opponent that doesn't have the same urgency that it has. So, you know, I think this is better for them to try to be in those types of playoff margin of error, so slim type battles, because, you know, you quickly transition right to that type of atmosphere in the playoffs. So, you know, to be the best, you got to beat the best. And so I think they're looking at this as an appropriate challenge as a primer for the postseason.
Sarah, we'll let you go on this last question. One of the best free agent signings of recent memory has been in the signing of Eric Staal by the Minnesota Wild. He sits here today leading the team in goals with 39 and points in 71. He's three goals shy of Marian Gaborik for the franchise single season record of 42 goals. You know, is Eric Staal talking about that maybe as a goal over the last nine games of the season? And just how important has his presence been in the dressing room in a addition to his on-the-ice performance that has been superlative for the Minnesota Wild?
Yeah, I think he's been very businesslike, you know, about this kind of hot streak that he's been on. And I know we've asked him continually, especially when, you know, maybe a week and a half or so ago, he wasn't too far behind the likes of Laine and Ovechkin. And, you know, I know obviously those players continue to produce, and Eric Staal's maybe cooled off a little bit, although, like, he did have that goal the other night. But he just kind of said, you know, I don't think I'm in that same realm, but I think for the Wild, it's been integral to its success. And having someone come in who is pretty much, you know, to be as consistent of a force as this lineup has had this season, in any position. You know, if you look through his kind of stat sheet, it's very rare you see a cluster of games where he hasn't produced. And so, I think coming to the Wild is really flattered Eric Staal's career, and it looked like he might have hit a rough patch and was maybe on the downside in New York after he was traded from Carolina, but that's not the case here. And you package that with the assets that he has as a leader, as a Stanley Cup champion, as someone who's been in lengthy playoff runs, and I think his value is only going to increase, you know, the longer this season goes on for the team.
Sarah McClellan covers the Minnesota Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. The Jets and the Wild, it would be a great playoff series between these two rivals, Sarah. Time will tell in the next nine or so games if it comes to fruition. But appreciate your time this evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Take care, Sarah. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss the NHL general managers meetings that just concluded in somewhere sunny Florida, Boca Raton, if I'm not mistaken. Talk about the GM's discussions up next. You're listening to the NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Do like the fact that they go back to the situation room, which creates a lot of consistency. But I think this is the first step to try and clean this up. And there's not that many instances when you look at it. But the problem is, I go back to that percentage wise, 2%. And it's who it happens to and what organization. There's a lot of loud noises around it.
Loud noises is what we specialize in here on NHL This Week. Drew Mindell, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with
you. Keep it down, Drew.
That was Jamie McLennan talking not about us, but talking about the NHL General Managers meeting, talking about the Coaches Challenge, talking about the new protocol as the NHL continues to chase their tail when it comes to coaching challenges and goaltender interference. Now it's going to solely reside... Well, not yet guaranteed. I guess they have to have approval by the NHLPA. Then it has to go to the Board of Governors, and they need unanimous 31 Board of Governor votes in favor of this in order to implement it mid-season. But assuming they get all that done, it'll then reside with the Situation Room in Toronto for determining if it's a goal or not a goal as this saga continues like a soap opera.
And we don't know if the change is going to happen in season, because they'd have to speed it up, Drew, because obviously the playoffs are starting in a couple of weeks.
I think their goal is to have it done for the start of the playoffs. They want the decision to be going to Toronto.
It does have to be unanimous.
It has to be unanimous. Yeah.
And the competition committee is involved, too.
Right. The competition committee, it sounds like the NHLPA is on side with this. It sounds like the Referees Association is on side with it. So it's likely going to happen.
Yeah. Board of Governors have to
Board
be
of Governors has to be. It has to be unanimous because it's a mid-season rule.
Well, why wouldn't it be? I think everyone agrees, guys, that the goalie interference has gotten out of control. Like, what is it? I mean, it should be black and white as far as I'm concerned. Yes, there will be some discretion involved. It's a judgment call, and Kevin Cheveldayoff was quoted in Josh Clipperton's article, who we have coming up here.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, it is a judgment call, but I love the idea of the Situation Room having the final call.
Let me ask you guys this. When they implemented the offside rule, and then there was too many, they were challenging every little thing, and then they put in the rule about a penalty for if you challenge an offside and you're incorrect. Should they do the same with goaltender interference?
No.
On a coach's challenge? No.
No.
Why not? What's the difference?
Well, especially because we don't know what it is. Right? Oftentimes they get the call wrong, and then you're going to get penalized for that?
You're saying they don't know what goaltender interference is.
I think there's more of a gray area with goalie interference as opposed to offside. I mean, offside is offside, right? This whole business of, you know, the skate coming up and not crossing, all that stuff, I mean, it's offside.
What about the fact that they didn't change that rule that they talked about?
Not surprised by that, Drew.
Saying that it could be, just breaking the plane of the blue line like you would with football.
No.
Instead, your skate has to be on the ice.
Yes. I agree with the GMs on that one.
Why take scoring opportunities? Why take goals off the board, though, for something as minor as that?
Oh, no. Hey, if it was up to me, I would have no challenges at all. I mean, but that's not going to happen.
I think it's too bad. I agree
but
with
I would,
you.
I would take it out completely, but obviously it's already in the game. It's a rule, and coaches can challenge offsides. But as far as goalie interference goes, guys, you know, right now the situation room makes the final call on goals, right?
Yeah.
And they can even, you know, buzz down in the middle of play. So, I mean, this makes complete sense to me, and hopefully they get it in time. They get it through in time for the playoffs, Sean, because you would hate to have a series determined by a wrong call, right?
Oh, imagine the outrage if that decided a game, or like you were talking about, a series. And yeah, I just, when the league itself is having trouble defining what goaltender interference is, I don't think it makes any sense whatsoever to penalize a team for challenging, potentially.
Have they solved the problem? By now putting it to the situation room, or have they just...
We'll see.
It's a baby step.
Or have they just made the problem so that...
You know what I'm happy about?
There's not a face to the problem. So the situation room is an entity.
Well, Drew, put it this way. No. It can't get any worse.
That's true. It can't get any worse.
Right, and I love the idea...
Replacement refs,
maybe. I love the idea of having a retired referee in the room, whether that's Carey Fraser or, you know, whichever referee they decide to go with.
There's going to be a rotating cast of six referees, right. The ones who are currently the off-ice supervisors. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there's some of the names that are certainly familiar to people throughout the hockey world. So there's going to be ex-refs in there. But, I mean, it seems to me that they haven't actually solved anything. They haven't made goaltender interference any less gray. They've just made it so that there's no public face of an incorrect goaltender interference call anymore. It's no longer the referees on the ice that are going to get the ire. It's now this entity known as the situation room.
And hopefully less calls will be determined by staring at the iPad or the game,
exactly,
or the game gear or whatever tiny screen they're looking at.
The situation room has the resources to deal with that.
Exactly.
But for something that's obviously a judgment call, I mean, why are we reviewing judgment calls is basically what my question is.
Because we haven't defined what the actual rule is.
So should they go with the European... The IIHF rule about
anytime
you're in the crease, they blow the play dead.
No. I don't think anybody was bringing that up at the GM meetings.
Well, but if you're trying to get rid of the gray areas, isn't that how you get rid of the gray areas?
No, I mean, goalie interference is preventing the goalie from having the ability to stop the puck. And they're getting it wrong. And that's why they're going to the situation room, because they're getting it wrong.
Fair enough.
Well, why else are they?
I agree with you. No, that is why they're going to the situation room. The problem continues to be, though, that there's no guarantee. I mean, you're just going to have the same people looking at the calls over and over again, and you're saying because it's the same people looking at it, they're more likely to get it right because they're taking out the number of opinions that would be involved.
I also just like the fact that it doesn't put a mountain of pressure on the referees who are huddled by a penalty box with an entire arena waiting for that verdict and that decision. And with every moment that passes, the pressure builds. You get guys in a confined room. You get a group of professionals in a confined room. They don't have 17,000+ people screaming or hollering at them. They can calmly and collectively, with the resources that they have, multiple angles that probably won't be available to the general public, take a look, break it down, and not have the pressure of the fans riding them to make a hasty decision.
It adds a layer of eyes. It adds a layer of accountability. But you're right, Drew. I mean, this doesn't mean that they're going to get every call right.
No, and that's, I think, the problem. Is that?
But I don't think it can hurt to have the situation room, Chris King and the boys, with all of the technology that they have.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it can hurt. It can only help.
Fair enough.
You're saying.
Yeah.
I think there maybe needs to be a broader definition of what goalie interference is.
And maybe a couple goalies in the room, too, or retired goaltenders.
I think a retired goaltender would make sense.
Get Trevor Kidd in there.
Well, I mean, I think that would make sense, though.
Kidd away from us.
I think there's something to be said to your idea there, Sean, because they're the ones who know, who could articulate why that goalie was interfered with or wasn't, and why he should or shouldn't have had the opportunity to make the save. Right now, I mean, if you haven't played goal, maybe you don't necessarily know
Slash that James Neal had on Connor Hellebuck and just show that as a goal that should not have counted.
Well, I bet you know what? It'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall in the room when the general manager showed that video, because a lot of them said it should have counted. A lot of them would have said that it still should have counted.
I don't care what anyone says. That goal should not have counted.
Well, but it was it goaltender interference, or was it just, or was it a miss?
Yeah, I think slashing Hellebuck in the head is goalie interference.
But the general manager, if the general managers can't agree on it, doesn't that tell you something? That they're, you know, in trouble a little bit?
Yeah, that tells you a lot.
Some good news from Jets fans is that Bill Daly came out and said the salary cap is likely to go up significantly next year to somewhere between $78 to $82 million. That's $75 million this year. That's even before the NHLPA could use their escalator to raise it even higher. So for
they don't use an elevator?
It's not like a transformative device that's bringing people up. It's a escalator in the financial sense of the word. It's not like the mountain man on the Price is Right game show. It's just a term that's similar. It's a synonym to the people moving device that takes you up a level.
I love that game on Price is Right.
It's a good game, isn't it?
What was it called?
It was called Mountain Man or Peak of the Mountain.
With the yodeling guy?
Yeah, the yodeling guy who goes up the hill. Anyways, I think it's supposed to be in the Swiss Alps or something like that.
Remember Bumper Stumpers?
Bumper Stumpers was always a good game. But the
talk about with Wayne Cox.
Well, those are all Canadian game shows, which means the winner got like a new washer dryer or something. It was really
kind of
sad.
Jean jacket or something. The old Canadian tuxedo.
Exactly.
I love a new washer dryer.
But the point is, for those who are concerned about the Jets being able to fit all their players under the salary cap's going up, and it's going up not by a little amount, by going up to $82 million potentially for next season, which will certainly help the Winnipeg Jets do some of the funny math necessary to keep this the core of this team together. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Joshua Clipperton of the Canadian Press. He was at the Board of Governors meeting, so we'll get a lay of the land from what it was like on the ground in Boca Raton. And we'll ask Josh how his tan is as a result of a few sunny days in Florida. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. A couple of important notes. The NHLPA has agreed to the rule change that'll see all video reviews being decided by the Situation Room, as we just discussed. So any goaltender interference will now be decided by the Situation Room as long as the Board of Governors gives its approval, which is expected. And then the name of the Price is Right game show with the yodeling guy is called Cliffhanger. Shout out to my buddy Kerry Wolf for texting that in, who apparently watches a lot of Price is Right in his spare time. So I'm not 100%. You might have to talk to Kerry about that off air. A little, you know, questionable about that one. But Cliffhanger was the name of the Price is Right game show.
If you were on Price is Right, would you ever like bid a dollar? I always thought that when you were in the early part to get on to the to become one of the contestants, I always thought I would want to be the guy that bet a dollar just to be the low guy and get on.
Well, my favorite part is the people. So, you know, let's say you bid $800, Ezzy, and then I have the last bid, and I think it's going to be more than $800, and you had the high bid.
Yeah, then you go 801.
No, but the people who go like 950.
Yeah,
it's like no, how stupid are you? Yeah. Just say 801.
Yeah,
you're giving up $150 for no reason.
The price is wrong at 950.
Yeah, it might be over at that point in time.
Now let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Canadian Press, he's their national hockey writer. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Joshua Clipperton. Josh, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. How's it going? No problem.
Good. How are you doing? How's the weather? Are you still in sunny Florida?
I am, yes. Yes, don't fly out till tomorrow. So I went for my first walk on the beach tonight, so no complaints.
What's happening on South Beach?
I haven't taken my talents down there yet.
Yeah. Joshua, obviously we brought you on to talk about the general manager's meetings, which wrapped up earlier today there in Boca Raton. The hot topic, as we all expected it to be, was goaltender interference, the coach's challenge, the Situation Room. Is this a step in the right direction now that the NHL has asked for all reviews to go to the Situation Room? The NHLPA has agreed to it. That just came out minutes ago, and likely the Board of Governors will approve it. Is this a step in the right direction from your perspective?
I think it is, guys. I mean, like it got to the point where I was, I mean, you know, every call it seemed, I mean, and it wasn't every call, but every big call would just blow up on social media, you know, coaches, players commenting after games. So I think that we're going to see the consistency the GMs are looking for. At least that's the hope. And then that way there'll be a smaller group of guys in the Situation Room in Toronto, now obviously with a retired referee as well, hopefully by the playoffs, to make his decisions, you know, more uniform so that we can sort of get past this sort of perceived coin flip from the refs on the ice. Now, I'm not saying that's how they make the decisions, but that's sort of the perception that it's been. Talked to Rob Blake today, and he said it's great to have the former official in the room because that'll help give the guys who are making the final call sort of the perspective of the referee in the heat of the moment, along with the referee on the ice. So I mean, it is a step in the right direction, but you know, I guarantee there's going to still be some 50-50 calls where it's going to more one team's going to be pretty upset afterwards, even with the situation room making the final decision.
Josh, just to get away from the goalie interference here for a second, I thought it was really interesting that it was revealed that the expansion draft or the potential expansion draft involving the Seattle NHL team will be conducted under similar conditions to the Vegas expansion draft. But I guess what surprised me was that the Vegas Golden Knights are at no risk of losing a player. Were you surprised to hear that?
Yeah, a little bit, for sure. I mean, like, I think that when you're coming in paying $650 million, which is $150 million more than the, than the Vegas team is, you're going to want to have the same parameters. Sort of talked to a couple of GMs today, and they're well aware of that. I mean, I think that you'll see in the future, fewer no movement clauses, being handed out because that really hamstrung guys. But I think at the same time, with Vegas' success, you might see more guys waive said no movement clauses for Seattle, just knowing how that franchise hit the ground running. But yeah, no, it's going to be interesting when this happens, if it's 2019, 2020, because you know, like as Vegas showed, you can really come out of the gate firing. And I mean, I think it's really important for hockey markets that are non-traditional. Not that Seattle isn't a non-traditional hockey market, because they do have junior hockey, but it's a new one in terms of the top league in the world. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, how that plays out on a number of levels.
Josh, we were kind of teeing up the meeting before this segment here and just things that were going on and ideas we were throwing around back and forth. And along with a group of ex-referees in the Situation Room, we were talking about the idea of maybe if a retired goaltender or two would join that group to kind of give the perspective from a goaltender. Was that discussed at all? And what were your thoughts beyond maybe adding a goaltender to the Situation Room to help kind of provide that mind frame from the decision?
Yeah, no, I didn't hear that, but that actually would be a good idea, and I wouldn't be surprised if that had been sort of bandied about. I mean, right now there's Colin Campbell, there's Chris King, there's Stephen Walkham. So yeah, there's no goalie as far as I know, sort of in that situation. That might be interesting. I did find it interesting that Coley Campbell mentioned to us on the first day that they believe that the goalies are being coached to embellish some goalies, at least. No fingers were pointed, no specifically, but when it comes to this, the goalies are aware of all the controversy and they're making, a meal of it sometimes. And I think that maybe that having a goalie in the Situation could probably help that. So that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that, but I think right now they're just happy to have a small group as possible, about five or six guys, you know, with a referee, sort of retired referee rotating in, who will be able to, you know, make consistent calls and sort of try to put water on this fire that's been sort of, you know, smoldering all year and really has flared up a couple times.
Joshua Clipperton is our guest on NHL this week. Josh was the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. Josh, you called it a smoldering fire, and you know, we heard Barry Bettman on a number of different occasions almost pleading with the general managers and pleading with his colleagues in and around the NHL to maybe stop being so vocal publicly about some of the what they deem to be blown calls or calls that don't go their way. Do you think that the events of the last couple days have maybe cooled the temperature? Or do you still think that the next time a goaltender interference call doesn't go a team's way, you're going to see somebody spout off to the media? We want them to keep spouting off to the media.
It'll be interesting to see what happens next. I found it really interesting that Lou Lamoriello the first day was sort of talking. You know, he was you know, talking about how people have to calm down, and you know, there's been a few calls, but you know, we need to sort of take a step back when it's his coach that has been the most vocal of them all about this. I mean, with good reason. I think Mike Babcock had some legitimate arguments, some legitimate complaints about a couple of the calls. You know, there was the one in Matthews and against Colorado, and then there was the Anderson when he was bumped in Buffalo. So I think that it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens next. I mean, I think that just the hope is that with the consistency that will hopefully come from having the, you know, this situation from having the final call, at least over time, there'll be more of a sort of a standard set. And like that was what Steve Yzerman said. He just wants 5 or 6 or 7 people making the calls so that at least you know where they're coming from. Whereas like a referee might not have to make a goal interference call for a week, for a month, you know, and then he's sort of put in that spot, you know, in the heat of the moment, you know, having to make a decision in under 2 minutes. I mean, it's unfair when the situation room will be seeing all the plays and they have all the angles, they have all the information. So, I mean, I think that that's what they're hoping, that just the consistency will lead to fewer complaints because just everyone will know where they're coming from.
Josh, you mentioned day one of the GM meetings, which was on Monday, and you had a tweet that got a lot of attention on Twitter about your question to Senators General Manager Pierre Dorion, and we obviously know what he responded, but what was that exchange like, and what are people saying down in Florida about the whole anti-Eugene Melnyk billboards that are popping up around Ottawa?
Well, I found it really interesting. I mentioned Lou Lamoriello and Pierre Dorion, a veteran move on his part to walk out of the general manager's meetings at the same time as Lou did, because everyone obviously wants to talk to Lou. He's the, you know, he's one of the elder statesmen. He's also the general manager of one of the most popular teams in the league. So Pierre tried to sort of duck beside him, and I sort of tried to catch up with him, and I asked him, he had a couple minutes, and he asked me what I wanted to talk about, and I think he kind of knew what I wanted to talk about, and I asked him, and he said he didn't want to talk about it. So that's pretty much how it ended. He turned heel pretty quick, and that's fine. He's allowed to do that. And I'm allowed to ask. So in terms of the billboards itself, there wasn't a whole lot of talk about it down here. Like to be honest, I was on another program a couple days ago, and I do think that the smolder, not to use the word smolder again, but the anger of a small but vocal minority of Senators fans has finally sort of had it with Eugene Melnyk, as you guys probably know. There's just so many things that have happened in the last, you know, 6-7 years with, you know, from Daniel Alfredson to more recently Kyle Turris to, you know, blaming the fans for calling the fans out for not coming to the games and in the playoffs and then this season, and then obviously raining on his own parade at the outdoor game. So I think people are just fed up. It'll be interesting to see how it goes, though, because Eugene Melnyk's a very stubborn man. I think we all know that, and he's very proud. So I don't know how much of an impact this will have, but if the fans are well within their right, and the team's well within its right, not to really talk about it.
Yeah, Josh, some encouraging numbers released also from the meetings. Cap hit of $75 million might go up now to 78. They're saying as high as possibly 82. I'm sure management and fan bases of young up and coming teams, I think specifically right here in Winnipeg, should be pretty happy about that increase.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's great news for everybody. I mean, you know, managers, owners, players. I mean, there's just more money for everybody. And, you know, especially with a team like Winnipeg, you mentioned it. They got to sign some guys, and that'll give them all that more room. I mean, especially with a team like Winnipeg that, you know, has, you know, built through the draft, built through trades, you know, that's really important to be able to hold on to your guys. And obviously we know that some of those young guys will need money, will be deserving of money, more money pretty soon. So I mean, that going up, and it's gone up, you know, consistently. This is one of the bigger jumps in the last 7-8 years, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, I mean, the league, as they like to say down here, it's sort of the boilerplate material, but the league's never been stronger, the game's never been stronger, and it's really hard to argue when you talk about the salary cap going up, all 31 relatively healthy teams, and then, a 32nd coming in, in short order.
Yeah, that'll make the lockout in 2020 all the more frustrating when it occurs, when people sit around and say, why exactly is this happening? Anyways, we can, we've got a couple years before we hopefully don't have to deal with that. Josh, let's go on this last question. You know, one of the things that was also talked about is maybe changing the offside rule, where a player could be deemed onside if his trailing skate was in fact in the air over the blue line and not flat on the ice. You know, are you surprised that that didn't get any traction at all? That was voted down, or do you think that maybe the general managers may have considered making that change?
Yeah, well, I think that they voted 21-10 against, and I actually talked to Jets GM, you guys know him well, Kevin Cheveldayoff, and he mentioned that, I mean, they've just changed the offside rule with the penalty, so I think that they want to give it more time to see how how it plays out. With this rule, I mean, it seems like cut and dry. Why not just have the skate over the blue line count? But then you look, I mean, that probably opens up another can of worms. Like, well, what part of the skate, you know, with the trailing leg, you're getting down to zooming in on like the, you know, the millimeters of the blade, where it is over the blue line. And like, as Kevin mentioned to me, he's like, there's this sort of law of unintended consequences, and they've just made a pretty major change by going from a coach losing a timeout to getting a penalty. So I think I'm not saying that's not going to happen, but I think that they were sort of wary of making another drastic change of that rule. I'm not saying that it's not going to happen. I know that Colin Campbell, I think didn't think that it was a good idea. Or no, sorry, he did. Sorry, pardon me. He did think that it was a good idea. He was a bit surprised that there wasn't more traction. But I think that the GMs on this front, at least, wanted to take their time. I think that they're happy with the way the offside challenge has gone this year. The reviews are the challenges are weighed down. The sort of the frivolous ones that are just obviously about wasting time to sort of slow the game down when you have your timeout late. Those have sort of been pretty much gotten rid of because of the penalty. So I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but I was a little surprised that it didn't get more votes. But it's definitely not a dead issue, I don't think.
Joshua Clipperton is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. He joins us from Florida, where the NHL general managers meetings wrapped up earlier today. Joshua, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
We'll do it again soon. Thanks, Josh. When we come back, we discuss the Montreal Canadiens. They've decided to return Carey Price to healthy activity despite their season being all but over. We talk about that decision up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past the top of the hour, still to come on the show. Josh Brewster, Anaheim Ducks radio host, joins us in about 10 minutes' time. Talk about the Ducks ahead of their visit to Bell MTS Place on Friday night. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at ZappiaGroup.com. Montreal Canadiens, they are definitely not going to be a playoff team this year. Very disappointing year in Montreal. Carey Price has been banged up for the majority of the season. Various injuries. His most recent one was a concussion. Suffered that concussion on February 20th versus the Philadelphia Flyers. Back healthy, the team is starting him tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Nine games to go for the Habs in a meaningless season at this point.
Yeah, they're on the ice right now.
They're on the ice playing against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Losing.
That's something they've done a lot this year. Are you surprised that they've elected to bring back Carey Price at this point of the season?
I'm more surprised that the Habs are 18 points behind the Devils for the last playoff spot. I mean, I had the Habs making the playoffs this year. I am a little bit surprised, Drew, but then you hear Carey Price say that if I wasn't 100% healthy, I wouldn't be coming back to the lineup. Now, having said that, these games are meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
So do you risk an injury here for no reason, right? Like, if Carey Price does get injured,
yeah,
and obviously we hope that he doesn't.
Everybody hopes for health. Nobody ever wants to see a player get injured.
Exactly, Drew. So everyone's going to be talking about how Carey Price got injured in games that were meaningless, right?
Only played 43 games this season. So this isn't like the only injury he suffered all year. He had a lower body injury,
yep,
that cost him a big chunk of the early part of the season.
You have to trust Carey Price here. But, I mean, if I'm the coach or the general manager of the owner of the Montreal Canadiens, yeah, maybe I think twice and just tell Carey Price that, okay, you know what? You're going to rest the rest of the season. You're going to rest the next 2 weeks of the season here. But obviously, Carey Price wants to play here. I don't think he wants to end the season not playing games.
Shawnee, I want to get your opinion on it first, but here's Francois Gagnon of RDS and TSN talking about the decision by the Habs to bring back Carey Price.
Why bother having Carey Price play more games? Why not shut him down for the year, make sure he's healthy for the start of next year? That question was asked of Marc Bergevin here today.
Well, Marc Bergevin wants him in front of the net because he wants to see the real Carey Price. And a lot of people in Montreal were looking for him all season long. So there's only a few games to go. I don't know how many games he's going to be in front of the net of the Canadiens. But Bergevin doesn't want him in front of the Canadian goal only. He's willing to let him go to the World Championship too if Team Canada wants Carey Price with them. So he feels comfortable with the fact that Price is ready. He's backing up tonight. He could be in the net next game. And he wants him to play as much as possible to make sure that the real Carey Price will be back next season.
That was from Monday night when he was the backup goaltender between the, I think it was the Panthers and the Canadiens. He's starting for the Habs tonight against Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
World Hockey Championships are in Denver this year. Or, pardon me, Denmark.
Okay, Denver. I'm like, Denver's Denmark. A random place to have them. Denmark.
Right?
I think they were in Paris, or was it Paris last year?
That was last year.
Okay.
I think they're in Denmark.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, Denmark sounds, I'm sure, you know, it'd be a lovely place to go, Sean. Would you send Carey Price if you're the Habs organization? Are you happy about Carey Price potentially going to represent Team Canada at the World Hockey Championships after, you know, such a down year, and the guy's set to start a contract that's going to pay him, what, $11.5 million a season starting next year?
I'm happier that he wants to go and that Canada could potentially have Carey Price in net.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy for that. If I'm a Habs fan, I mean, you want to see Carey Price on the ice, but is there any point in playing Carey Price for the remainder of this season? Why don't you look at some of your young goaltenders or some of the goaltenders in your organization? I mean, you're not exactly, you don't have the hardest schedule going up the final stretch. You play Buffalo, Detroit. I mean, you play the Capitals, playing the Penguins now. But Montreal hasn't scored a goal in their last, they scored tonight. But since
prior
to tonight,
then
scored a goal in two games. You really want to throw Carey Price into that fire, put all that pressure back onto Carey Price that he has to be the wall that he's used to playing in these meaningless games. That risk, that could potential risk re-injury, a head injury coming off of? No thanks, Montreal.
What about the idea that you get him into the action, you get him back to being comfortable so that you're not starting next year with him not having faced really live action, for months on end?
No, I agree with what Sean's saying. From a strategic standpoint, there's no point in starting Carey Price. Carey Price has obviously told the Montreal Canadiens coaching staff and management that he wants to play, mm-hmm. right? It's fairly obvious. Yeah. What other reason is there?
Well, shouldn't that overrule everything? If the player's healthy,
now you're making $11 million.
I mean, I'm sure I shouldn't say I'm sure because I'm not privy to those conversations, but it's I think it's safe to assume that that has been brought up, that Carey Price was asked if he just wants his season to end now.
Right.
And he's obviously said that he wants to get some games in. You know, we should also mention Antti Niemi's probably going to start half of these games. Carey Price is not going to start all of these games.
No.
He's probably going to start half of them.
Well, what about sending him? I mean, should I ask Sean about it? What about him going to the World Hockey Championships? I mean, you heard Francois Gagnon in that clip say that
Carey Price wants to go, Drew. If Carey Price wants to go, Hockey Canada will welcome him with open arms.
Of course, there's no question.
So why would you have a problem with that? He's trying to help his country win a gold.
But
that's a better way to end the season than ending the season off on a team that's going to miss the playoffs.
So if you're Marc Bergevin, you're okay with him going? Playing, you know, another. I guess it's not like he's been, you know, overworked this season. I guess you're just cautioning against mm-hmm. potential injury that would linger into next year.
But wouldn't you rather see a guy fight for relevant games and a game that is meaningful to his country as opposed to him force himself back into these useless games against?
Yeah, but if he doesn't play, I know what you're saying, Sean. Sorry for interrupting.
No,
if he's not going to play for the Habs.
Then
he wouldn't be able. I mean, the Habs weren't going to say, okay, we're okay with you not playing for the last nine games of the season with us, but then we're going to be fine with you going there. I mean, he comes in, he'll play a few games for the Habs, like as he said, he's not going to play all nine.
He'll play three or four or five, whatever.
They'll split it up in whatever number they do, and then he'll go play for Team Canada and be certainly the number one goaltender, because I don't know who. I mean, well, he's Carey Price.
Give Antti Niemi the load, maybe sprinkle him in for a couple, but for the most part, I would shelter Carey Price for the remainder of this season.
It's interesting. It's just been such a disaster of a season in Montreal. And I mean, Sean, you were sort of muttering under your breath earlier about Jonathan Drouin. I guess you have him in your fantasy team and how lousy he's been for the Habs this year. It's just all throughout the entire Habs organization, it's just been. you know, just such a disappointing year. The Jets still have to make their sole visit to Montreal later on this month, or early next month, rather. Ezzy, you'll be in attendance at those games in Ottawa and Montreal. So, I mean, you can see up close and personal just how disappointing it'll be of the season for the Habs.
Yeah, and, you know, back to, you know, the whole question of whether or not Carey Price should be playing in these meaningless games. Sean makes some good points, and I don't disagree with him. I think it basically comes down to Carey Price wants to end the season on the ice as opposed to on the sidelines.
At some point in time, you let Carey Price probably make the decision for himself, given how much trust you put in him, you know, namely $11.5 million per season. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Josh Brewster. He's the Anaheim Ducks radio host. He joins us next to talk about the Jets' opponent on Friday night here at Bell MTS Place. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Josh Brewster. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. Josh, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. Welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure as always, Josh. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Anaheim Ducks. They're in town on Friday night to play the Jets, the final meeting between these two teams this season. You know, the Ducks scratching and clawing, Josh, in the battle for a playoff spot in the Western Conference. Currently, they hold down the second wild card spot, only a point behind the Kings for third place in the Pacific Division. From my perspective here, you look at this Anaheim Ducks team, and you know, we know about the injury troubles they had earlier in the year, but you look at this roster up and down, and this is a veteran-laden team. It's a battle-tested team. They've got pretty much all the attributes you'd be looking for. Is this the proverbial team that you do not want to face in the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, I would say that the Ducks couldn't be described as that. You know, they always have a very strong second half. I think possibly in recent history they are the best second half team. And you know, they look, they're built to play some really good defense, and they're very, very solid down the middle in terms of, you know, Getzlaff, Kessler, Henrik, and then Grant / Vermette when he plays. So they're tough there, and you know, they've seen a lot of playoff action. I mean, they haven't been to the promised land since 07. But you know, they've got a lot of playoff experience, and so when you look at the Pacific, you know, it's quite conceivable that, you know, Vegas, for example, they you know, they may not want to run into the Anaheim Ducks, you know, a healthy Anaheim Ducks team, and so I think that the Ducks are you know, grayed out very well for the playoffs. Now, whether they're good to play, you know, more than a round or two, I think that's really the big question. Is you know, are they really an elite team? They certainly were in the Final Four last year. So the big question now is, are they still that?
Well, just sticking with veterans, prior to the NHL trade deadline, the Ducks acquired Jason Chimera from the New York Islanders for Chris Wagner, and then they signed Chris Kelly after he picked up a bronze medal in the Olympics for Team Canada. How have Kelly and Chimera fit into this Ducks team?
Well, I think Kelly has fit in very well, and I thought it was a very astute move on his part to, you know, keep himself active and play in like Spengler and play in the Olympics. I think Kelly's been really tenacious. And look, I like the fact that Chimera is a big guy with a lot of speed. But quite honestly, you know, Chris Wagner, you know, was not a point producer really, but, you know, he's on the Islanders now. And I thought that Chris Wagner was a very tough player to play against. So, you know, quite honestly, I think that, you know, Chimera scored a goal the other night, which was great. And guys, look, the guy, he's a veteran guy. But I'm not so sure the Ducks needed to get bigger. And, you know, it wouldn't even surprise me, believe it or not, wouldn't even surprise me if they went and pulled up one of their prospects, like a Kevin Waugh, some young fast kid in San Diego. I still say the jury's out on that fourth line. I think that Grant with Kelly and Chimera have looked good, and you can make an argument that Chimera's worth bringing in. But you know, I like the way Chris Wagner played, and so you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think the jury's still out on that fourth line.
Josh, the Ducks and the Flames always have entertaining matches. I mean, the Ducks own them in their home rink for the longest time. Calgary just barely clinging to a playoff hope, we could say, but the Ducks can really put a nail in their coffin today with a win over the Flames this evening.
Well, they certainly can, and you know, at the same time, as far as Calgary Flames go, you know, I think that you know, no Flames fan could look back at the trade deadline and say they have some kind of big regrets over, you know, Brian Burke has always had a lot of disdain for the overhype at the trade deadline. The Flames are what they are, and quite honestly, I wouldn't mind being in their shoes. I think that they, you know, they've drafted well. They've got a lot of guys who they've drafted and developed on that club, and I think things are going to continue to get better. You know, get a little more help from Mike Smith, and you know, I think the future looks very bright. They're only a few, you know, they're only a few points out. They're a bubble team this year. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, for the Flames to be in league with a club like the St. Louis Blues, for example, that's not bad. That's not bad at all in terms of their development. And, you know, like I said, you know, Johnny Hockey and Sam Bennett and Monahan, all these guys, you got to love that this comes off of their draft table, because that's really where the glue that's really how you drive an engine of success in this league. Patching holes isn't going to do it. So, you know, I think Flame fans should hold their heads high.
Josh Brewster is our guest on NHL this week. We're talking about the Anaheim Ducks. The Ducks in town to face the Jets on Friday night, a key Western Conference playoff matchup or potential playoff matchup, as the Ducks are scratching and clawing to be a playoff eligible team at the end of the regular season. Josh, Ricard Raquel, I mean, again, 31 goals this year. He's a great story in that on a team full of big personalities like the Anaheim Ducks, you know, Kessler, Getzlaff, Perry, it's Raquel who really does the majority of the damage on the score sheet for this team, leading the team in goals, leading the team in points. Is he continued to not get the credit he deserves throughout the NHL?
Yeah, I think he's underappreciated. You know, I mean, you know, I can moan about the West Coast, you know, the East Coast bias, for example. The simple fact is, you know, the games are on too late, as far as I'm concerned. They're just on too late. And the writers, aside from the 30 to maybe 40 or 50 writers who really are day-to-day watching the NHL, I think most of them are only interested in statistics, and they're casual observers, quite honestly. And I would argue, for example, that the Selke Trophy shouldn't even be voted on by the writers anymore. It should be voted on by the GMs. Mm-hmm. I think the subtle nuances are a bit lost. As far as Ricard Raquel is concerned, yeah, he's underappreciated. But, you know, at the same time, that's going to change. I mean, he got his all-star nod this year, and he is the future of the club. And trust me, when you've got Corey Perry on the hook for as many dollars as you do, for as many years as you do, and it's still kind of a question mark as to which Corey Perry you're going to get right now, because his career, he's not going to hit those numbers again. It's guys like Ricard Raquel or Jakob Silverberg or Andre Kasha or even Adam Henrique, who you brought in. But you look at the guys you developed now, you know, you've got to say, who's the future of the club? Future of the club is Ricard Raquel. And so I think that, you know, he's an excellent playmaker, but he's also a very good finisher. He's just an all-around good hockey player. And, you know, it'll be interesting, especially for a guy who plays wing a lot. As his career unfolds, you know, will he be the kind of wing who moves around, like is always in demand? You know, like when contract time comes, there could be quite a number of clubs if the Ducks can't, you know, salt him away. You got to wonder, this is the kind of guy you look at and you say, I bet you there's always going to be a lot of people lined up for his services. Just one of those wingers who's always worth bringing on. You know, so hopefully for the Ducks' sake, he's going to be there for a long time. You know, he's signed up now for a while, and, you know, we'll see what's going to happen with Ricard Raquel, but I think that he's certainly deserving of what his all-star nod this year.
Josh, Marcus Peterson is a name that not many Jets fans will be familiar with. He was a second rounder back in 2014. What have you liked about Peterson's game so far this year?
Well, you know what? He's another big guy who can move, and I think that he is smart to stay home on the onset of his career, and he has done a lot of that. But I think that he's also able to take a shot and move the puck out of the defensive zone. And you know, when you look at guys like Kevin Bieksa, Francois Beauchemin. You know, BX is at the end of his line now, and he's injured at the moment. But you know, you've got to be able to keep up in this league, and I think that they've given him a good shot. They've got a kid named Andy Walensky who they just brought up. They've got another one, Jacob Larson. You also take a look at guys like Jake Gardner, Justin Schultz. There's guys around this league. The Ducks have developed a number of good defensemen. And as far as Pedersen goes, I think, you know, it's a very early, it's a small sample size, but I think that on nights when he hasn't been in the lineup, he's been missed. And if I had to take Beauchemin and Bieksa, or Beauchemin and Pedersen, I would have to say that you know Bieksa and Pedersen, or Beauchemin and or Pedersen, would certainly be preferable to Bieksa and Beauchemin in at the same time. And so that's no knock on Beauchemin or Bieksa, but they're older guys. And so Pedersen is a guy who I think he'll get, you know, he's just very green, but he'll get a lot smarter and he'll start to pick his spots offensively. And I will tell you now that as the playoffs go, watch, especially now as the playoffs get close, watch who's got the scoring from defensemen and who doesn't. I guarantee you the teams that contend are the ones that do.
Josh, I want to run an idea by you. The Winnipeg Jets are deploying a quote-unquote fourth shutdown line of Brandon Tanev, Adam Lowry, and Joel Armia. And the way that they are able to kind of neutralize some of the opposition's top offensive threats, it really reminds me of the job that Sammy Paulson, Rob Niedermeyer, and Travis Moen were able to do during the Ducks' 2007 Cup run. Now, a lot has been made about whether a more skilled younger player should be on that role or on that line for the Jets, and I just wanted to maybe get your perspective on just how crucial a shutdown line like that could be for a team as they enter the postseason.
Well, I think that, first of all, I think it's very astute that you bring up what that line did, because I think that, you know, for the Teemu Selänne and the early career Getzlaf and Perry and all those guys, and we had Kunitz and blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody here remembers, what the Niedermeyer, Paulson, and Moen did. And one of the things that they did very well was not just shut down, but turn the tables offensively often enough and score often enough on the opposition. So, you know, I think between Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev, and Joel Armia, you should be able to get some offense out of there. I think it, you know, certainly when you brought in a guy like Paul Stastny, it pushed a little talent down the lineup a little bit. I've been a big fan of the Jets since before the season started. I'm very impressed with their offense, but you know, you take a look at Tyler Myers coming back, and I think their defense is a lot better. God knows their goaltending is a lot better this year. Hey, why not? Maybe Tanev, Lowry, and Armia. It would be interesting to see who goes up against Getzlaf's line tonight, for example. I mean, I've seen some clubs lately pull that one out where, like, for example, the fourth line in New Jersey with Boyle, you know, they've got a guy who can produce points on their fourth line in Boyle, and they unleash that against Getzlaf quite a bit, and that was very interesting. So, you know, as far as the Jets go, I think if there's a dark horse in the West, it's the Jets. If there's a dark horse in the East, I wonder if it's the Devils. But I think that the Winnipeg Jets, I would love to see what they can do to create a line that would surprise people. And I think the element of surprise would be kind of big. You know, it's like you have all these big names producing all this offense, but if they can pull this off, if this thing with Armia, Lowry, and Tanev, if it works, I think the Jets are a threat to do a hell of a lot of damage.
The Anaheim Ducks are into Winnipeg on Friday night to meet the Jets. Prior to that, they have a big playoff potential, playoff ramification matchup against the Calgary Flames later tonight. Josh Brewster is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. Josh, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
Take care, Josh. We'll do it again real soon. When we come back, we look at the Eastern Conference playoff race, talk about the surging Columbus Blue Jackets, winners of 9 in a row. Look out for the team from Columbus. One final segment up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Oh yeah,
love having him.
Yeah. Oh, he's a hell of a player. I mean, we as coaches, you have expectations all the time that you think they should be dead on all the time. You got to be really careful, and I do. I have to be really careful with my frustration when things aren't going well for the key guys in our team, because they're not going to be perfect. I just like the way we work through it, and it's a really big road trip for us here. Get out of here before the storm comes. Give them a day off tomorrow and get ready for Florida, who's playing.
Columbus Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella talking about his team, winners of 9 in a row. Ezzy, your prediction might end up coming to fruition. They started the season as gangbusters, one of the best teams in the league. They've gone through a bit of a skid for the, you know, the 3 months or so from, let's say, November all the way through, you know, February or January. And then all of a sudden, the Columbus Blue Jackets, winners of 9 in a row, they moved into a tie for second place in the Metropolitan Division. Watch out for the Blue Jackets.
Huge game tomorrow night versus Florida.
Huge game. Yeah. Absolutely. That's a huge game for the Panthers as they are fighting the Devils tooth and nail to get into the playoffs. They're a point behind the Devils with 2 games in hand, so they could potentially see themselves in a playoff spot depending on what happens with that game tomorrow night between the Panthers at the Blue Jackets. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Asor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio in this segment of the program, brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Just announced earlier today, making his return to Rumors at the end of May, May 31st through June 2nd, Danelle Rawlings coming back to Rumors. You know him from the Chappelle Show. Ezzy, you're going to be in attendance.
I won tickets.
You won tickets.
Nice.
Shout out to the Rumors Instagram page.
Everything is coming up, Ginsberg. Ezzy's off to see Danelle Rawlings May 31st through June 2nd.
Yeah, Remus and I saw him, I believe that was last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, another hot date.
Very good.
Another hot date for you and Remus?
Yep.
When's your kid being born again?
A couple months.
Okay, but this won't conflict with the Danelle Rawlings show?
Well, it might, but...
Okay.
We'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Attaboy, it's a problem Ezzy. That's what I like to see.
Future Ezzy's problem.
Yeah. Future Ezzy, yeah. You can try and bring your newborn child to the comedy show.
I'm sure Naomi will love that.
Yeah, that'll go over really well, no doubt about that. Anyways, Danelle Rawlings coming back to Rumors May 31st through June 2nd. Get tickets now at rumorscomedyclub.com or check out all their upcoming acts. The Blue Jackets, winners of 9 in a row. Second now in the Metropolitan Division.
It's amazing. They're second.
This is another one of those teams. We were just talking about it with the Ducks. I mean, this was a team that looked like a Stanley Cup contender earlier in the year, went through an inexplicable tailspin.
They smoked the Jets early on in the season.
Yeah.
What was it, 7-2?
It was something.
Yeah,
7-2. It was a pretty huge. It was, you know, one of the first games of the season. They absolutely dominated the Jets. Now, all of a sudden, winners of 9 in a row, like I said, 41-28-5. They're tied with the Penguins for second in the Metropolitan Division. Penguins do have some games in hand.
Drew, you know, sorry to cut you off. Yeah. Can you imagine another Blue Jackets-Penguins first-round series? I mean, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, it would be terrific. Artemi Panarin has been absolutely unconscious as of late. He's got... You know, his last 14 games played, he's got 20 points, 9 goals, 11 assists. That looks like a terrible trade for the Chicago Blackhawks right now, given how bad Brandon Saad has been.
How's he scoring if he's unconscious?
Don't laugh, Sean. It just encourages him to make jokes like that.
Well, this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Yeah, but leave the comedy to the professionals, not to the crazy people like you specialize in.
Artemi Panarin has been unbelievable, Drew, and Scott Cullen had a good piece up on TSN.ca talking about, you know, the terror that Panarin has been on, Shawnee. Mm-hmm. But, you know, early on in the season, there were so many reasons to love this Blue Jackets team, right? And, you know, they were having trouble scoring goals. But for me, what was the most surprising was that they were struggling defensively. And now Sergei Bobrovsky is starting to play like the Vezina winner that he was last year. And, you know, we talked about Panarin, but Pierre-Luc Dubois is having a really nice season. Oliver Bjorkstrand, in his second year, he's having a good year. Cam Atkinson scored 35 goals last year, but he found himself a healthy scratch and in Torts' doghouse earlier this year. He's been putting the puck in the net.
Point a game over the last 14 games, 7 goals, 7 assists.
Lots of depth. And Seth for Jones. Me, guys, Seth Jones has to be in the Norris Trophy conversation. I realize it's maybe going to be tough for him to win the Norris Trophy this year. I mean, Victor Hedman, Drew Doughty, John Klingberg, they're all in the conversation. But for me, I mean, if I'm voting, I'm probably putting Seth Jones as one of the three best defensemen in the league right now.
He's also been over a point a game over the last 11 games. He's a little banged up right now, but he had 6 goals, 7 assists for 13 points in his last 11 games played. This Blue Jackets team, it's taken a long time, and they've made it difficult on themselves, but they certainly are looking like the talented team that they were at the beginning of the year. You mentioned Cam Atkinson. He's picking things up. Boone Jenner had been struggling for so long this season. He's playing a little bit better. You know, the addition of Ian Cole has helped a lot on the back end. He's sort of come in and solidified that defense, made
a healthy Ryan Murray.
Healthy Ryan Murray. Cole and David Savard playing together, and they've made a nice defensive pairing there. They did
one of the deepest teams in the East. I mean, I would say Tampa and Pittsburgh are the two deepest teams, but if Columbus isn't third, they're probably one of the four or five deepest teams in the East, and you know they're not going to be an easy out in the first round, that's for sure.
Certainly not. I mean, you looked, you know, for a while there, it looked like the East was, there was a clear top four in the East of the Penguins and the Lightning and the Bruins and the Capitals, but all of a sudden the Blue Jackets are surging, and they've certainly thrown their name into the conversation, especially with when you have a goaltender the likes of which Sergei Bobrovsky is. I mean, his numbers are really improving as of late as well, so you get him hot come the playoff time, it's going to be a real interesting battle there in the Metropolitan Division, Shawnee.
It's funny, you don't often associate an acquisition of Thomas Vanek with a winning streak, but here we are. 9 wins in a row, Thomas Vanek, third line right winger. You talked about Pierre-Luc Dubois. It takes me back to that draft in 2016 where Jarmo Kekalainen and the Blue Jackets pass on Jesse Puljujärvi, and everyone's going, what are they possibly thinking? And now Pierre-Luc Dubois centering their top line alongside Cam Atkinson, Artturi Panarin, and this team is rolling right now, and looking pretty solid entering the postseason, playing their best hockey at the best time of the year.
Yeah, you mentioned Vanek. He's come over from Vancouver, and he's contributed. He's got 8 points in 11 games. Obviously, you know,
on his 10th NHL team.
Is it really 10 teams now?
Yeah. Something like
it's
that.
It's crazy.
It's at least 7.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he gets traded every year at the deadline, so there's no doubt about it. It's interesting, though. I mean, he won't be obviously relied on as one of the key drivers there, and who knows if he's even, you know, makes the lineup, you know, come playoff time. But him,
he's been on 8 teams.
Okay, Mark Letestu came over. They just added these sort of very quiet depth pieces, and all of a sudden this team is beginning to look like the team they were in the month of October. And again, now if you're the Penguins and you're saying, oh geez, I don't want to play the Blue Jackets, this is, you know, a rough and tumble team, they're scratching, I believe they scratched Brandon Dubinsky, he's a healthy scratch for the team. I mean, this is another guy who can come in, knows, you know, battle tested come playoff time, that you know, you certainly don't want to have to go up against him.
Yeah, Drew, and we mentioned, you know, the top guys are Artemi Panarin, Cam Atkinson, Pierre-Luc Dubois, but when you can put guys like Matt Calvert and Boone Jenner and Brandon Dubinsky, Sonny Milano, these types of guys on your third or fourth line, I mean, to me, what's probably the scariest about this Blue Jackets team is when Sergei Bobrovsky is playing at his peak. I mean, we know how good of a goalie he is, and we talked about that group of defensemen, you know, probably top five in the NHL, if you ask me, with, you know, Jones and Ryan Murray and Zach Werenski.
Well, you remember,
Jack Johnson.
Yeah, Werenski went out early in the first round of the playoffs last year against the Penguins, and that's sort of when the Blue Jackets collapsed at that point in time.
The face injury, right?
Yes, he took a puck to the face, if I recall correctly, and he was out of the lineup. They don't end up trading Jack Johnson at the deadline. Mm-hmm. You know, holding on to him, it seems like the right decision. Anyways, keep an eye on the Blue Jackets in the Eastern Conference playoff race. It's going to get very interesting in that big game, like you said, against the Panthers and the Blue Jackets tomorrow night in Columbus, should have playoff ramifications.
That's it for the Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to all of our guests, Josh Brewster. We are joined by Joshua Clipperton and Sarah McClellan. In case you missed any of the show, any of those interviews, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca. You can also find it wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night, good luck, and thank you for listening to NHL This Week live on TSN Radio 1290.
As long as we sit together as a team, we'll be all right.